This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, April 14th, 2011.
Hi, Mom.
The time is 4:47, and I'm calling the April 14th Student Assembly Meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here.
Here. Yep.
He's going to be late.
He's here.
Ben.
He should be here in a minute. So it's time. Here. He's here. He went to the bathroom.
The guy's here.
Okay. You know where the other is? Late. He's also late. She is unexcused.
Here.
Yes.
Yep. All right, and you have Desai. He's showed up late. Yeah. Sure. All right, we have approval of the minutes, the April 7th, 2011 minutes. Are there any amendments to those minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Open microphone. If there's anybody in the audience who would like to address the assembly who is not currently on the agenda, feel free to come up to the microphone at this time. Seeing nobody, we will close the open microphone session. Announcements and reports. First up, Katharina Bellrum, candidate for student trustee. Please come up. Welcome. Yep, please take a seat and speak in the microphone. Your name.
A senior information specialist at the Campus Information and Visitor Relations team. You might know us primarily for our service to the community as tour guides. We are actually a multifaceted organization. We are responsible, of course, for giving tours to prospective students and their families, as well as members of the Board of Trustees and prominent alumni and their families as well. But we also operate the General University switchboard. We are also responsible for the reception desk at the Day Hall lobby, as well as the parking booth on campus. I'm also an ambassador for the College of Arts and Sciences as well, and have recently joined the Greek community as a sister of Kappa Delta sorority and a pledge of Pi Sigma Epsilon, a sales and marketing fraternity. In terms of my platform and why I'm here today, I'm choosing to run for the position of student elected trustee because Cornell and school spirit are something that's very important to me, and that is the underlying theme of my platform. The first priority that I have is tuition regulation as well as increase for financial aid. I hope to do so by increasing the fundraising efforts that have been initiated by President Skorton and help to assist that by implementing other events on campus throughout the year as elected as your student trustee. In terms of mental health, and I think this is probably one, if not the main priority of my initiative, and I seek the help of DSA if elected, I hope to broaden communication between mental health organizations on campus, CAP, EARS, Gannett as a whole, and hope to seek DSA in hopefully forming a committee for mental health to reach out to other social organizations on campus, such as the Cornell Concert Commission, as well as See You Tonight, the Red Carpet Society, that affect other areas on campus. We may not realize that they also do help the mental health initiative by providing entertainment and other ways to reach out to the Cornell community, hoping to form other events, maybe as pre-events to the concerts for the future. In addition to mental health, I have on the agenda for my proposal, promoting and preserving diversity, especially in light of recent financial and social constraints on cultural programming and social programming on campus. At this point in time, I hope to extend my outreach to the Cornell community at large by holding open office hours every week if elected as student trustee in rotating locations on campus. Right now, I'm partially biased to Live Cafe, but if elected, I hope to schedule rotating locations, have a website so that 1 week I would be in Live, 1 week in the Green Dragon Cafe, 1 week in Mann, 1 week in Duffield, et cetera, to make myself more accessible to the community at large, as well as to reach out to the graduate student population as well. I also believe that we should hold pulse meetings for student organizations. And again, I think that this is not impossible to reach out to every organization on campus, either holding a semesterly wide event for these committees or to stagger them in terms of interest. For example, in the beginning of September, holding a meeting for, say, all of the organizations that are responsible for entertainment. The next week in terms of political programming, such as the Cornell Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, etc. And that is my plan, if elected as student trustee. Now, very briefly, in terms of feedback or any of questions that you have for me as members of the current Student Assembly and the future Student Assembly.
All right. Thank you. So we're talking about having meetings by subject with different organizations.
Yes.
I imagine at this point in the campaign, maybe you've been to a few of these clubs, open air practice. How are people responding to that kind of organization?
For the most part, and it still is very early on in the campaign season, but for the most part, it has received positive feedback. And again, this planning would be implemented the summer before the academic year to be in touch with the president-elect and chairpersons of the specific organizations so that we'd have a tentative calendar for the beginning of the academic year. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Catherine, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me. My name is Nathaniel Rosen, and I too am running to be the student representative on the Board of Trustees. I'd like to thank you all for inviting me here today to speak to you. If it's okay, I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself, about what I think the most important issues on campus are and how I plan to address them, and then a little bit about what separates me from the other candidates. I'm a sophomore, English major in the College of Arts and Science, and I'm pursuing a hotel minor, in real estate in the hotel school. I'm also taking Arabic here. I'm involved in the Cornell Israel Public Affairs Committee, and I'm also head of a religious group on campus. But what I want to talk about when it comes to concerns of students is this, and if it looks like a cheap $4.99 big red binder, it's because that's exactly what it is. But over the past few days, I've been walking around to students all over campus, whether it be on West Campus, in North, on Hope Plaza, or in the libraries, and approaching them with this big red binder and asking them one simple question. What is your biggest concern with Cornell? Because the job of the student trustee ultimately, his value ultimately to the board, is to relate the concerns of the student body to that larger board of trustees. And I think it's time that someone went out and asked the students themselves. What I've heard over the past few days is that the concerns can fall into three major categories. It's one, a lack of communication between the administration and the students. Two, concerns about financial aid and rising tuition. And three, addressing mental health, which remains a pressing issue on our campus. I'd like to talk about some of the ways that I hope to address these, and I'll start with communication because I think that's where the student trustee and the SA can do the most toward furthering that goal. I'd like to work with the SA and keep them closely involved with the student trustee. I want to have monthly meetings with specific agendas to invite all campus leaders who find it relevant to attend these to discuss these issues and work with the trustees to vocalize the student voice and to target ways that we can address these issues. I'd also like to, after attending Board of Trustee meetings, come and make reports to the Student Assembly immediately and stay in constant contact with them with issues that affect them. And the other thing that I'd like to do is continue this Big Red Binder campaign. Because it's one thing to have office hours, but if you ask some of the student trustees who hold them now, I think they'll all tell you that there aren't many people who show up. And it's time that we stop hitting our head against the wall and stop waiting for students to reach out to us and start reaching out to students themselves. Because if there's one thing I've learned from walking around with this big red binder, it's that students have unbelievable ideas and that they are concerned greatly about this university. It seems like someone just needs to ask them. And so that's what I endeavor to do. When it comes to financial aid and tuition, it's clear that dwindling allocation to the university from both state and federal levels poses a threat. And we need to recommit ourselves to increase financial aid and take every measure possible to cut costs where it doesn't affect the academic integrity of this university. A good example is the recent decision of the board to bring in Bain Consulting to cut $80 million a year from our operating budget just from administrative streamlining and purchasing. Finally, with mental health, I think it's time that we stop taking a reactive approach and start taking more proactive initiatives. And that means while it's great that we have these unbelievable services at Gannett and we need to continue to fund them, we also need to look at ways to increase student health on this campus. And that means things like advocating for free gym membership like they have at so many other schools to increase student health. That means things like I heard some suggestions from students about having flexible testing dates during finals. It means things like instead of the alcohol education we have right now that is impersonal and online, advocating a student-run alcohol education, where students talk to other students about issues that affect them, issues that are salient. And I actually just came out of a meeting today with the top administrator who felt strongly about this idea and was open to hearing more about it. Ultimately, I think that's the type of leadership we need from the student trustee, someone who's going to be able to go out there, reach out to students in a way that maybe they haven't been reached out to before, and work closely with the student assembly and other leadership groups on campus toward furthering the goal of uniting the student voice, making it loud, and making it heard. Thank you.
All right, and so, questions? So, when you're going out to students and reaching out to them with your binder, what are they saying? What are on students' minds? And also, if you could give us, you know, your biggest priority based on that and how you plan to approach it when you're elected trustee.
I can't tell you actually how many times I've heard from students that they understand that the university has to take decisions that they might not like, but that the university ultimately feels are in their best interest, but they want to have a voice. They want to have a seat at the table, even if it's not a voting voice, but it's one that they just want to make their concerns heard. So I think that's something that can be done by bringing students into the Student Life Committee, and I know ASA has brought different groups to talk, and I think that's something that should be encouraged. In terms of my biggest priority, I think that increasing communication is the biggest one through those specific measures that I've outlined, but it's also attacking mental health, trying to increase resources in terms of gym. I hear that one of the holdups on increasing gym membership for free is that we just don't have the facilities to accommodate it, so that's something I would look into. And then this alcohol education program is something I feel passionately about because I think it's so simple that students talking to other students is far more effective with the problems facing this campus than a computer talking to students. So those are some of the things that I'd like to tackle.
Daniel, thank you.
Thank you.
If you are going to give the reports,
they did a lot of recommendations, some of them I think are very good. They're going to try to make these parallel breaks between the fall and spring semester, so we have more breaks in the spring semester, such as President's Day, and one of those breaks that I'm asking for off, as well as learning from the jail. However, I do have a lot of concerns, and as a member of the committee, I feel like we need to bring this to you as a student representative, for you guys to bring that as many students as you can. The first is that they're actually advocating to shorten the study period and also the exam period that the students have. So instead of having 2 weeks, they'd like to have 1 week of exam. I was talking to the president, Andrew, and we were kind of debating this, and we don't know if that's the best way to address mental health and stress issues, especially if only having a week to have all of your exams. And not having that time to spread it out might create a lot of more stress for students. This is for finals for both the fall and the spring semester. Secondly, they're looking to actually shorten senior week. They don't have a number to put on towards the senior week, but it could be anywhere from shortening it to just 2 days to shortening it to 5 days. They have no concrete recommendations. But if they don't hear from students saying why they believe that the senior week should be kept, along with the benefits that it has to take the instead, they will take it upon their will to shorten it to a degree we don't really know how. I'm giving you these in the most dire means possible because it really depends on the student to give them feedback. So I know that there is actually an email that you can contact them, I believe I've
But aside from that, there is nothing too controversial. Actually, the student assembly, I don't know if you guys know this, but most student assemblies, at least at community schools, or many student assemblies, have paid officers. So it's those, you know, already work with paid, given stipends and all that. And so they actually cut the stipends for some of their officers, many of their officers. Many of the incoming officers vowed to not take a stipend. Figures are not very large, I think they're in the they're not terribly large, but they're in addition to what I'm saying.
Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you. Moving on to the new business, I'm going to move to Resolution 75, that they would fund the guidelines for performance. Is there any objection to that? Seeing none, I'm
okay, so let's go ahead and go through the April 1, 2011 guidelines draft. You all should have it in front of you. Let's just go straight through it, go to the major points, and cover what we did at the last meeting. Remember, all these changes are a culmination of a year's worth of work. It was a campaign pledge of mine to do something similar to this, and hopefully we can see some improvement and some fluidity in the process here. All right, so going straight to page 5, 2.1.2, limitations for new applicants. This change here is, again, to go to point 1, switches the budgeting period from a semester budget to a year-long budget. And that is change 2.1.2. Moving on, changes under 2.3 on page 6 are largely semantics. And it's suspension instead of revoke, and it's largely just for semantic reasons. No other real changes there. Moving on to page 7, are there questions thus far? All right. Moving on to page 7, request of funds. So this here is to go along with the year-long budget, and it simply clarifies that an organization can only apply once per semester, and because, again, we are moving into a period where an organization can apply at the spring semester before the academic year for the next academic year, it's meant to clarify as well that if they use that spring semester deadline, they can't use the next fall semester deadline. And the reason for that is because we cannot multiply the number of applications which get submitted to the SAFC, but we still want to allow the groups to have this option. Is that correct? Do you want to add any more to that?
Add to that, the discussion in the committee, we felt that was in the interest of the organizations too, because organizations don't want to be applying 3 times a year for funding either.
So,
I
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's up to the chair. No, but they could technically use those funds as long as they're in the same category for those expenses in the fall.
Let's say like they're planning a local event for the spring before they request the fund, and then you're like, oh, we also like to do a small travel event.
Special project.
Yeah. It would be
a special project.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be, you know, they'd have to demonstrate that they didn't foresee these expenses, and then they could use special projects category. All right, 3.2.4, simply a calendar issue, not a very big change. I'm specifically saying when the applications become ready, and this point may be in larger discussion when if we discuss the multiple funding periods per semester, but currently we're not talking about that. It's a separate issue, which comes into the setting of the SAFC calendar. But these changes have nothing to do with the setting of the SAFC calendar except for that one point. And the co-chairs and everybody came to that. March 1st is a good date for that. Again, page 8, 3.2.6 now. Academic year, moving from semester to academic year. New applicants, because of the fact that we're moving to year-long budgets, we have to address what a new applicant is, because there used to be a limit on if you're the first semester you're applying, the second semester you're applying, and then you can just apply in general for full application, for a full budget. Because groups no longer have to apply on a semester basis, we adjusted what a new organization was. So again, it comes back down to the year, the academic year, and if it's the first time that they're applying, the max is going to be 1,500, just to address the discrepancy between what currently is considered the first semester you're applying, you capped at 500, the second semester you're applying, you're capped at 1,000, and then you're an old organization. Now it's simply your new organization is the first time you're applying, you're capped at 1,500, and then you're an old organization, a returning organization, essentially. Any other comments on that? Questions about that?
Yeah.
Let's just go. We can come back. All right. Oh, was it? Okay, sorry. Also, the last point on this page was, where's it going? Oh, jointly organized events, yep, 3.3. This is also the point of contention. Removing joint organized events. If you want to amend this section, you'd have to go back to 3.3, jointly organized events. We are going to have a larger debate, I think, just about this point right here. But this goes back to what we were discussing last week in the removal of joint organized events. And if you want to have a debate specifically about that, we can come back to this section in our discussion and debate. So, and that was the change. We're removing jointly organized events as a category entirely. So that doesn't mean that organizations can't work together to create an event. They simply can't apply and receive funding as a brand new organization for a jointly organized event. All right, so they can't receive extra funding on top of their own personal allocation for a jointly organized event. They'd have to go into their personal funds to fund a project, a jointly organized event, and they could simply divide which organization pays for what for that jointly organized event. If you want to explain it a little bit better.
So it depends on, this would be getting rid of the jointly organized event application where basically an organization, if it gets
up to three other organizations to sign on can get more money budgeted just for one event. It doesn't change the ability of organizations to request funding from their own budget for various parts of an event. So organizations that wanted to put an event on together could request parts of the expenses in their individual budgets and then pool them together. But this would avoid having them apply per event.
Yeah.
And I'd just like to make a point to please hold all questions until the government has been in the
government. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Budget hearings, page 10, old point 4, new point 5. This is again addressing the issue of budget hearings, so that's point 3 on our PowerPoint. So organizations can request a hearing if they want to talk about their allocation, only if the hearing, if the request is over 500. And they're going to have an opportunity during the hearing to submit missing documentation. This will hopefully address the vast majority of appeals. And again, it will change the function of how the SAFC functions, because they're going to have to review allocations or applications before the budget hearings and simply release them. Before the budget hearing, and then if an organization has an issue with the allocation that they received, then they can request a hearing. But instead of forcing all groups to go to a hearing, or not forcing, but you know, having all groups essentially attend a hearing and just telling them your application is okay or you may not be getting funding this category, it provides a more useful function for the actual hearings. All right. That covers change on 4, 5, 10, pages 10 and 11. Continuing on, I think. So, continue on. Can you explain change 7.2, the direct payment? Sorry.
As soon as I find it.
Yeah. Page 15. University changes.
Yeah, well, it's these are changes that are going on institutionally about how we handle accounting for independent registered student organizations. These are most organizations that apply for SAFC funding are not actually part of the university. They're independent. They might be independently incorporated, or they just might be an informal organization. And it turns out that we should not be using the university tax-exempt status for these groups, and there are certain other legal ways we have to treat them differently, some of which involve more paperwork for everyone. So this is incorporating that change in practice into the guidelines, because this is where organizations go for information about payment. In a nutshell, they have to pay taxes, sales tax.
So in a nutshell, the SAFC is going to start paying tax. They used to not pay for tax. Now they will start reimbursing for tax. And then there's also a larger issue of the university is no longer going to be liable for an organization that commits programming. So if an organization engages a speaker, that speaker can no longer go after Cornell University if he doesn't receive payment. He could technically go after the organization. But that's an issue which the assembly may have to deal with in the future. Point 8 on page 16, reversion of funds, goes back to the year-long budget and changes, instead at the end of the academic semester, it's the first business day of the academic year, again, to solidify the whole year-long budgets. And then after that, there's not very much. There's actually So a maximum allocation for engagements is going to go up from 3,000 to 5,000 per organization for academic years, and that's to kind of address this need of, all right, well, if we're going to eliminate co-organized events, then we'll increase the amount that an organization can receive for any single event. And that's, again, to try and address this issue of, well, we're going to be removing the ability for an organization to create a shadow or, you know, just a separate category to receive funding, but we're still going to increase their budgets a little bit to accommodate the removal of the co-organized events. And I think that concludes the changes that we are going to be going through here. Now, you all have had this document for a little while, but if we could, I would like to go back into a more of the philosophical discussion for the 4 points, and what you all feel we should adopt and what we should not adopt, because I think that the wording itself isn't very complicated, but what our intent as an assembly is what we should be voting on here. And of course, we can reflect the changes if we don't agree with the intent or whatnot. So now I'm going to turn to the SAFC. I know I think Andrew, you requested they come up with some type of document or, and so you all have it in front of you. I still have not had a chance to review it.
I'm sorry if there are enough copies. I mean, I can go downstairs and print out more.
We do like every other.
But it's supposed to serve, I mean, you guys requested it. It's supposed to kind of serve as a memo as to how the SAFC feels on different changes.
So I would like to note that, though I haven't had a chance to review this document, I'm pretty sure that the committee in its year of deliberation has reviewed these points. Both commissioners have sat in on every single meeting, along with the SA liaison, who is a former SAFC co-chair, and we have discussed and reviewed every single potential issue with the changes, and as a committee, we decided that these are the most feasible, the least risky, and the best potential changes for the SAFC. Our advisor, Ari, who has seen the system over many years, has seen what works and what doesn't work, endorses the changes wholeheartedly. I can let him speak on his behalf, on his own as well, in support of the changes. But I think that if you have specific questions, especially regarding, you know, these comments here, I think that that is where we should hold our debate today. So. So yes, they could. So essentially, whatever money they don't spend, they don't use in the fall, rolls over into the spring. All right, they can only use that money, of course, if it's in the correct category and if it's on correct expenses. But if they need to request extra additional funds because they don't have enough money that rolled over, they can in the spring.
Until they hit the cap.
Until they hit the cap, of course.
My other question is, what's the SAC's plan for dealing with?
So I don't think we fully addressed it to the commission yet. I think more the commission is kind of unhappy with these changes in terms of work overload. I tried to draw out the academic year and how it would actually look, and I ran out of a lot of room just because there are so many different events or so many different, I guess, things we're going to have to organize for these organizations. As well as internally. So we have three to four opportunities to apply, which would mean three to four required reviews, and then hearings, and then
appeals, and then throughout this we have unlimited special projects as well as recruitment. So there is a tremendous amount of work overload. We haven't addressed that question yet, but I mean, I think the commission in its entirety is pretty worried about these changes.
And so I'll also just jump in here. And our committee, I think, did address the idea of work overload, and the intent of these changes was also to address the work for groups, the work for the office, and the work specifically for the commission. And if we assume that organizations can now roll over their whatever money they don't spend in the fall, they can roll over in the spring, then all the organizations who still have money in their accounts will not be applying, presumably, in the spring. Thus, the number of applications who get submitted to the SAFC will decrease logically. There's no guarantee. Special projects are currently, there are unlimited number of special projects which can be submitted this year, so that is not a change. And we haven't seen this, I mean, there have been an increase in special project requests, but again, these changes would hopefully, presumably, reduce the workload. The largest change which will change the function and may increase the workload is the changes to the nature and timing of the allocation hearing, in that the commission will have to review the budgets beforehand and then take in any new documents which are missing at the budget hearing, but that will hopefully be offset.
That's what he said.
That will hopefully be offset by not forcing the commission to meet all 400 organizations who apply and simply meet, let's say, the 50 organizations or the 60 organizations who make a mistake on their application. And that will hopefully drastically reduce the amount of hours that the commission has to review. Yeah, I need to force stress. Yeah.
So, I mean, logically, so I can tell you without a doubt that this is going to increase the workload for the entire commission. Just from guessing, I think it would probably double the amount of hours that a commissioner would have to put in, just given the amount of things we're going to have to organize, as well as doing just business as usual recruitment, guideline changes and all that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Next on the list is Representative Bruce, and you have submitted for your question.
Thank you. From the number of treasurers and presidents of clubs I've talked to, they've at least guidelines on the restructuring, except a lot of them have concerns about the spring budget. They're going to raise the line. The sense that we have a limited pool of cash together, and if students are certainly more accessible to apply these products, the SAFC ran out of money this year and granted us an SAFC.
Personally, I think it's definitely plausible because we don't really have a model to go off of where the cap should be, because we're not going to get all the requests for the entire year at one time. You can't really efficiently figure out caps. You can't predict what people are going to be asking for in the spring. So there is the chance that funds will be completely depleted. And it's really going to be hard to figure out where the caps are going to be, and the caps are ultimately going to be lower for all the organizations if our byline funding stays consistent. We're planning on applying for more, but hypothetically speaking, if byline funding is the same for us, caps are going to be lower.
It's a great question. There actually are two models for it. One is how the GPSAFC currently does budgeting, which is on an annual basis. And groups towards the end of the year, at least in theory, can be at a disadvantage, but the GPSAFC has worked into a rhythm where it basically holds back enough cash so that it has money to give out until the end of the year.
SAFC also had a model for this. Up until 4 years ago, there was an annual budgeting option, so the SAFC had to decide how much money it was going to use in the fall, and it would lock away the rest until the spring. There is going to be a certain amount of estimation, and groups in the spring might not necessarily have as much money available, but I think based on the experience with SAFC in the past and with GPSAFC now, that can be rendered into a relatively small difference. And, you know, if a group is going to succeed with $3,000 instead of $4,000, that's not necessarily such a bad thing, especially if it allows more flexibility for the majority of groups.
I mean, most
cards.
It's not like super quick, but can I get like 30 seconds? Yeah, I mean, historically, like, caps have always been lower in the spring semester than in the fall, but I think the real issue at hand that you said, like, the thing we need to be worried about is our groups that can't apply until the end of the year, i.e. club sports special projects, are they going to have enough? I think as long as the SAFC sets enough money on the side for special projects, that'll be okay. In the other sense, if we run out of money outside of special projects, is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, is it a bad thing to say that we've allocated all of the money the SAFC was supposed to allocate as opposed to having $200,000 that we're going to roll over that wasn't allocated? And I think, you know, some people on the committee thought that allocating all of that money was a good thing and that would be considered doing our job. I don't want to speak for everyone.
Thank you.
Can we let the SAFC commissioners? Okay, sorry. Okay. Okay, yes.
First off, Aria, how did you get a list of the cohorts that you think that's the last semester? Last year, do you have that list?
I don't have a list of the individual events, but I did compile some financial comparison information.
Sure. Okay, and I think we'll be able to ask the chair about which events later on, because I think that some people we lost that debate right now, there's a lot of issues we should consider, but that's going to be some back to the usual school organizations. My second question, so this is directed to the co-chair. In your opinion, and I think we'll talk about this after, do you think that under the current system of how budgetary hearings work, would it be an incentive for groups to intentionally not put in as much work into their application the first time around because they know that the SAFC would tell them where they're wrong and allow them to submit additional documentation to fix their application during the first budgetary hearing? That's your opinion, correct?
Right.
And under the current system, the SAFC has to figure out like where group A provides them to have the documentation, the SAFC would have to go like that and figure out where the document is wrong, correct?
Which it already does, but yeah.
I mean, it would have to do that under this system, correct?
I mean, it already does that. So it wouldn't have to change anything. But yeah, sure, sure.
Okay. So I feel that because under the current system that is being proposed today, there is an incentive for a group. I appreciate what you said. There is an incentive for a group to not submit everything correctly for the first time because they know the SAFC will go and fix what they messed up, you know, tell them where they can fix it, and it won't be penalized for it. I think that something needs to be changed. And what I'm suggesting, what I'm proposing, what I like to see debate upon is whether or not, let's say, a group messed up its first round of application, it can go to the budgetary hearing, submit additional documentation, but because it messed up and it didn't incentivize it, so intentionally messing up, have a penalty for the cap. So I'm proposing, I think I discussed maybe 20-30% penalty on the cap that it would have received under the if it had gotten everything right the first time. This is better than the current system, and I just
said that
the current system, if it messes the group messes up, it gets 0%, 100%. What I'm suggesting is disincentivize groups from applying incorrectly on purpose at the very get go, keeping an incentive that they have the reason to sit down
and go to the
next step. Correct.
So really quickly, I think that you misunderstand the incentive of organizations. I think student organizations apply and try to do a correct job on their application because they're already scared of the SAFC process, and that you're doing a disservice to organizations and treasurers by saying that they're lazy and that they don't try their hardest in the first application process.
Okay, I want to make 2 points. First one is, the committee has been working on these changes since last September. Every text, I know it doesn't seem like a lot of textual changes, but a lot of thought and consideration went into these. So any substantive new ideas presented at this point are a really big deal. And, you know, I think we would have to take them back to a lot of people. And given that this is the end of the semester and the amount of effort that was invested, I'm not sure that it's worthwhile to do something like that at this point. I'm speaking for myself. But in 5 years, there hasn't been a substantive review of SASC like this. So I really want to see it come to fruition. The second point regarding these, I think there's a little bit of a having your cake and eating it too problem here, because, you know, every time that there are appeals coming to the SA, one of the biggest reversals seems to be about supporting documentation, and the group had everything but this one requirement. And, you know, if we're going to come up with a more flexible process, it has to be a more flexible process. Dealing with percentage penalties, we've done this before, and it's proved to be very difficult for the commission because it involves a whole bunch of extra calculation steps that have to be applied to specific organizations. And I'm not sure what benefit that really gets us either.
And I would say that all these, that change, we did specifically discuss it, and after the cost-benefit analysis, we felt that the benefit of creating this did not outweigh the cost.
Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Culver Johnson. Okay. Next on the list is Representative Sanders.
All right, so I have a quick question and then a longer question, so I'll try to be quick. So the first question I have is, we eliminated the dry 325 early spring event funding. I was wondering, for those who don't take advantage of the year-long application and do the normal fall spring, are we eliminating the option of having early spring event funding anymore?
So that's the thing. So we're not necessarily eliminating fall spring. All right. Now, I actually want to address kind of the point here, implementation of restructuring. No, I'm just saying is that if an organization wants to do exactly what it did this year and exactly what it did last year, in this current system, it can, with the exception of co-works. All right. So if an organization wants to do that, there is nothing stopping them from doing that with this new system. It can do exactly what it's done for the past 5 years, essentially.
You cross out completely 325 early spring event funding. So an organization may apply to funding for an event that will occur on the first day of spring class and on the first day of spring budget hearing.
So that
okay,
could...
Well,
yeah.
The way it works now is if you have an early spring event, you have to apply for it in the fall semester when you apply for your regular fall funding. The way it would work in the new system is you would have to apply for it in the fall semester. So
the same way.
It's the same way. We just don't need a separate thing anymore because no funds are reverted in the middle of the year.
Yeah,
so my last point, I guess that's I worry mostly about implementing the changes. I think that you guys came up with a really great document, but I'm worried that it's a lot of change very quickly. I don't believe that we should phase these things in. I think that's a mistake as well. As we see in the FAA and the Appropriations Committee, when small changes are made, a lot of people submit them despite the emails that go out, despite the education efforts. So one thing I'd like to hear people's thoughts on is, especially because we missed the March 1st deadline for education to be available anyway, is having a year-long education campaign on these changes, adopting them now with an implementation date of next year. That way, March 1st documents go out on March 1st rather than in the middle of April. That way, groups have an opportunity to be educated on the SASC, have an opportunity to familiarize themselves better with these changes and prepare for them. So I would just like to hear thoughts on keeping these changes but implementing them a year from now.
The reason why I would strongly...
Uh, give you guys
The reason why I would strongly disagree with that is, to a large extent, that's already happening. We aren't going to be doing the applying in the spring for the fall semester until next spring anyways. So the only real changes that are happening here is allowing groups to apply for an annual budget in the fall and changing the hearing system so that if groups screw up, they can apply additional documentation. I don't even think it's possible to lose money over that, because you can still do the same thing where you apply in both the fall and the spring like you did this year, and you're just giving groups another chance to apply for documentation. Like, I can't see any possible way how a group would get less money because of these changes, the way that they're being rolled out right now.
And I would also like to point out that there are still many months to, specifically work out line by line exactly how the SAFC internally will operate with the implementation of these changes. But I think right now we simply need to get over the hurdle of whose responsibility is it to enact these changes. And I think that as elected representatives, we've heard a lot of issues regarding the functioning of the SAFC. I mean, I think if we lead, the last line here, however, because of the procrastination or laziness of a few organizations, this process is being completely revamped. I think that is a wholehearted misunderstanding of why we are reviewing the SAFC system. And I think the reason for that, and this is with all due respect for the commissioners, but I think the reason for that is because as elected representatives of the students, we are here to do a thoughtful review of the process. We have spent a year talking about these changes, reviewing them with administrators, with SAFC commissioners. Personally, I wanted to go much further than what we have here presented in front of you. All right, but after a year's worth of discussion, we came to these changes. What we felt as a committee was doable. Yes, it was going to be a struggle. Yes, both some people, myself, I'm not happy that the changes don't go far enough. SAFC commissioners are unhappy that they think the changes go too far, that they're too risky. But I think after discussing it with somebody who's been in the SAFC and SA role for 10, I mean, I don't know how many years, These changes are very doable, and we have literally worked through every scenario.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So at this point, I'm going to ask if there are any members of the audience, non-SA or SAC members, who would like to ask questions or make a comment from our 75. So just raise your hand. Okay. And then also, I just want to make clear that in responding to questions, anyone at the table, you can do so. You don't have to be on the list. Okay, so moving down the list, that's Director Block, and you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I want to thank you. I'm just going to start off by saying that I don't think that we should really go about changing this too much, especially because we've spent an entire year working on this. It's a little ridiculous for us to come in here after having seen this for like 30 minutes and say that we know that it was better not to change the data that we're working for you. I just had one question about allowing the funding to apply to the service for 1 year long.
Can you repeat your question?
I guess I was wondering if the SAFC, like, what was their reaction to having groups be able to apply for those either year or 2 years?
Okay, a point of order. And I know that this is confusing because it's different from how things are done right now. But we're talking about two different concepts. One is the budget lifetime, which is going to be, under this proposal, the whole academic year. So if you get funds, they don't revert until the end of the year. And the other one is how many times can you apply for funding. So that doesn't change. So an organization that applies for spring funding in the fall doesn't have to choose to do an annual budget. It would do it the same way as an organization just applying for fall events. Does that help at all, or is this still not?
And then I guess my other question is just like, in terms of
things
like the logistics, I kind of agree with our set of data.
I do want to say one thing about, you know, there's kind of a spectrum of planning from strategic decisions to tactical decisions, and I think most of the SAFC's work historically has been consumed with tactical planning. How are we going to get through this budget cycle? How are we going to get through these organizations right in front of us? And what we're talking about right now is strategic planning, some structural changes to the process to try to make it more efficient on a long-term scale, sustainable scale. And the thing about strategic plans is you don't have all of the details yet. You don't have the dates and the calendar worked out yet. And for the people who are going to be involved in implementing that, that means there are going to be a lot of questions. Now, when I talk to the commissioners who I have talked with so far, have told me they think in concept that these changes are all good, or almost all of them are really good. They're just worried about how do we implement this? What if something goes wrong? What if there's an unforeseen complication? And my response to that would be, I hope that the SA will be willing to pay attention to that feedback, and if problems arise, make tweaks.
And then also, I still haven't, so I understand there's hesitation to implement the changes, but I still haven't heard an argument for why there needs to be a full year to iron out how these changes are going to go through. There is no reason why these changes, the implementation of these changes, can't be done in the next month of school, in the next 3 months of summer, even in the first month of coming back to campus, especially when we have an advisor who's, you know, Ari, who's willing to help the SAFC commissioners come up with a working plan, who's assured the functionality of the SAFC for many years. And I still think also that if we don't pass these changes, there's very little incentive in the first place to go about implementing a plan to specifically day-to-day how it's going to change. So,
So I think that, you know, we've been talking about around the point for quite some time. In the past, there is no implementation plan within this particular resolution. And I think that we open the document by saying exactly how we feel. We don't necessarily think these are bad changes on the whole, and some of them are pretty good. But obviously we come into this fear that we're going to try to implement them and then all hell is going to break loose. And I think that we've come to realize that, if anything, at the bare minimum, we need the implicit backing of SA, such that if we come to a situation where things are really going to break, we need to be able to fine-tune as we see fit, rather than saying, oh man, like, we have to do it this way, because that's how we legislate it. We need to be able to make modifications on the fly when we realize something is really isn't working.
Thank you. Next one was
Hey, so just a couple, one quick first question is, what is the status of two cycles per semester? I know we're kicking around, like, we're not going to have it in the fall, we're thinking about having it in the spring. What is the final status? Is that any of that rhetoric in this document?
So that is actually one of the points that the SAFC said was just absolutely not feasible. It'll too much change. So the committee, as a committee, we decided let's not implement that for the fall. Too much change. And thank you for bringing that up. I didn't bring it up earlier. Again, that's one of the points that, as a committee, I conceded on, and that we would hopefully entertain those discussions for the spring. But again, when we appoint the calendar, and that's also another thing, that it comes down to the calendar. That doesn't necessarily have to go into the
document. Right. Nothing about that is formalized in the document.
No.
Okay. So the second point I'd like to make is about cohorts. And I actually feel somewhat strongly about actually keeping cohorts in our format. And I'll describe a couple reasons why. So the first reason is
basically the cohort situation that it is. I think a lot of people don't like cohort situations because they think of it as a scenario whereby you can double dip, so on and so forth. But what I will say is that if you do get rid of cohorts, you actually disincentivize organizations to collaborate with each other. It's a lot harder to organize it in a manner where it's like, okay, for my budget, I'm going to report these things, and for your budget, you're going to report these things. It's a lot easier to be like, well, why don't you just ask for some of the things that you have on yours, and I'll just ask for this whole thing on mine, right? I think it's good to have an incentive for organizations to collaborate on events. When you think of a lot of keynote events on campus that are very, very good programming, I think a lot of them happen to be co-organized events. I think that happens to bring a lot of diversity on campus. I think that's what works. So now I'm just going to address a couple of concerns that people do actually have about cohorts. So the first thing is about incentivizing in terms of students asking for more than necessary, right? Large, loaded, sticky fees, so on and so forth. I would say that that doesn't go necessarily to a part of cohorts, more so if you want to do that, we want to put a cap on, student speaking fees and so forth. The other thing is that it presents an issue with office. I would say there are workarounds for this. A couple of different workarounds include having kind of a major, first group, so on and so forth, say, okay, all the money goes into that first group's account, but whenever you apply for reimbursement, you have to have every single group actually sign on that. That prevents the fact that, you have basically multiple accounts that are being set up and stuff like that. So I would say, given the fact that we're going to be monitoring the situation for the next year, I think you monitor the cohort situation, you see that it's actually really becoming a problem. And if it's not, then I think there are a lot of workarounds to current problems, and I don't think the right solution is just to destroy cohorts entirely.
So I would say that we actually have to monitor more than just cohorts. We have to monitor the entire change, of course. That's our responsibility. I would actually counter and say that cohorts as a category disincentivize groups to work together. When you think about it, instead of having to create a consortium of 15 groups to get together the amount of money that you need to put together an event, you simply only need to get two groups so you can equal the same amount of money. So instead of having, five groups coming together to pool, each pooling together $1,000 to get the $5,000, they simply need two groups to come together to get $5,000. And so I would say that it actually, the event as a category, cohorts, disincentivizes groups to work together because they simply put two names on a piece of paper and then they get, poof, $5,000. Regarding implementation of changes, we have discussed it. This is a PowerPoint slide that I presented to the SAFC. There are discussions still going around, and there have been discussions about how to implement it, but again, it's hard to have implementation discussions if you're still debating whether we're actually going to make the change in the first place or not.
Can I?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, there's something I should add to that. Kind of an evolving thing related to that, the changes about payment of sales tax. We may have logistically infeasible for us to support cohorts the way that we have traditionally, which is another reason I want to emphasize that this proposal does not call for eliminating jointly organized events. It just calls for eliminating budgets devoted to jointly organized events. So organizations can still collaboratively request money for events that they put on together. In a nutshell, we've been told that we will not be able to set up accounts anymore, second accounts for independent registered student organizations. The university wants to have one account per organization university-wide. So right now, many organizations have multiple university accounts. That's going to go away next fiscal year. And supporting jointly organized events with that mandate is going to be really difficult. However, we can fund these events through the conventional SAFC budget process. We're happy to experiment, but I've got big concerns about us continuing to do it the way that we have, just from a logistical standpoint.
Okay, thank you. And on that note, I'm actually going to back in order for R69. We've seen that we have members of the 40 years. After the R69,
like the bone packet. I was like, what is this?
All right. So, moving on to R59, we want to
present what this one does.
I'm sorry, I was saying
you have
okay.
You have three minutes.
Great. So as I mentioned last week, we're not going to discuss 77 right now, but this was a resolution in response to a concern that was brought up in 77 before it actually had a number. Was just a discussion of if an organization figures out that their event is held in a place that is basically inaccessible, are they required to move it? The answer was no. And we discussed, you know, some other stuff that we're going to go into. We'll discuss that during 77 another time. But this says that the onus should be on the university to make these buildings accessible so that student organizations don't have to worry about this in the future. Of course, we can as organizations, as students, handle building maintenance. That's not our job. It is the job of the university. So what this resolution does in a nutshell is essentially ask the university to prioritize this construction project in order to bring all these buildings, some of which are 140 something years old, up to date, up to snuff, there you go, with ADA accessibility regulations as they stand, or a comparable standard, since technically, you know, you're not. But that is
one of the things. Yeah, one thing I'd like to add is that a lot of the times when we've been talking to students for our Resolution 77, one of the biggest questions is, well, aren't all the buildings accessible anyway? And that's really a problem, that people expect the buildings at Cornell University to be accessible to students with disabilities, but they're not. Many of them are not. And so if students expect the buildings to be accessible, and the law asks for buildings to be accessible and for all new buildings to be accessible, and the administration has, when they build new buildings, made them accessible, shouldn't we also urge them to focus on existing buildings that are inaccessible?
I don't know.
Like Willis-Bury Hall. And so that's what this is doing. It's simply urging the administration to fulfill the expectations of the students, which is who we're here to advocate for.
Yeah, please, would you like to add anything?
No.
No? No?
Right.
Yeah? David? No?
All right, first
of
all, thank you, Mr. President.
I applaud this resolution, and I think that every student should have the right to access to a building on campus. We say it's interesting to study, and that includes getting the entire motto.
Can I make a friendly
amendment?
Can I make a friendly amendment quickly to this?
Sure.
Where the blank is in the fourth whereas clause, the blank should read 850.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. It's the exact same line as 77. It just, didn't get, like...
Do you know that amendment, the 1, 2, 3, fourth whereas clause, say 850?
Yeah.
Call the question and a second. Now, before we call the question, if you're a community member and you'd like to vote on the census body, community members are allocated 2 votes collectively. So if you're a student, please go up to commissary rule and he will give you a red card and you will count your votes. So, Mike, why don't you pass that to the table?
Cool.
Get you a little coffee. Get you a coffee.
Hey, Mike, just pass
it up now. You should have done that already. I think you need one more right here. Just say it.
I believe you're saying
with two collective votes.
Oh,
based on how
exactly.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, mean you only have a job.
Had something stuck in your throat.
Right.
All right, so we have been moved. We have a motion to vote. Is there any consent on Resolution 69? Seeing none, we are going to. We'll do a placard vote. We'll do this community vote. If all community members who are in favor of Resolution 69, if you please raise your placards.
You can move.
Or your hand.
Raise them high.
Okay. All right. Please grab your placards. If any community member is against Resolution 69, please raise your placards.
I did.
Could the trustees report to vote in favor of Resolution 69? If the members, please raise your placards. Vote in favor of Resolution
69. Can we get to vote? Yeah. Oh, it's such a conflict of interest. Shoot me.
All right. Go ahead, placards. If you are against the two proxy votes in favor as well. If are there any assembly members against the
almost as many members are there?
Any abstention? By a vote of 22-0.
This is only step one. Only the beginning.
Okay, we are back on Resolution 75. That's actually a guideline on reform. On the oral on the oral co-sponsors.
I think that was a needed break.
We're back. Stretch.
Round two, I think that was a needed break.
We're back in room 175.
I actually have
a question. Yes, someone who lives is representing the change.
That's
a
win.
Alright, so.
Resolution 75. So, there's going to have to be continued discussions between the SA internally and the SAFC. Every single student organization has been notified about these changes. They've all been given an opportunity to respond as is required by Resolution 3 or 7 that we passed at the beginning of the semester. And then also, a key point, which I just want to keep putting out there, is that if an organization, student organization, chooses not to take advantage of these changes, they don't have to. All right, they can continue operating as they have. Which is very about the universities. So, but yes, there will have to be continued discussion.
Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Robbins. Okay,
it kind of seems like you guys are very adapted and you want it all in or nothing. And I was thinking, and you can tell me if you guys considered this and thought about this and what your response is, but one of the major complaints is that if we do this system, it'll be a lot more work for the SASC because a lot less rooms will have incentive to get all their stuff in on time and it's two processes. And
Josh about this. What if there was some kind of penalty for not getting it right the first time? That would give him concession and that would be less than you. So just tell me if you thought about that and what you think about that. But also tell me, and this is directed at the commissioners, if this were the changes, if this money as is, can you do it? Yes or no?
So for the first point, I think the penalty idea, it would work, but it could backfire groups to pad their budget even further, whereby the penalty would not mean anything to them. In regards to actually implementing this, I honestly have no idea. It's like, the way I describe it to people is you're changing a catering business into a full restaurant, right? You're making a full service. And I have no idea how many customers we're going to have. Like, it's just a very, very drastic change. And in earnest, I don't know if these changes will be able to be implemented.
Either
of
you have
any
answer?
I mean, I think that it could potentially get implemented. I think that you're going to face a lot of challenges, and that's why we came up with that document for you, is to show you that, we're not, resisting all the changes, but we definitely have concerns. So it's not like we're going into this gung-ho saying that the world's problems are solved. I think that also one thing that you can, because there's going to be an increased workload, or at least the commission feels like there's going to be an increased workload, you could have more commissioners decide, this really isn't worth my time, and they could drop off, and you wouldn't have, the loyalty to the commission, and so recruitment efforts would have to increase, and then you would also have less knowledgeable commissioners on the commission, because there would be higher turnover.
Yeah, my greatest fear is that we're going to lose the senior commissioners who have understood the process for 3 to 4 years. They might just leave because it's a completely new process, and the inherent muscle memory or education that's already built into them, it's almost like an apprenticeship in the beginning of training for the new commissioners, and we're just not going to have that.
Thank you. That's time. That's on the list. BP Rats.
Two-thirds to pass.
Okay. So all those in favor of
moving
out of the
party,
taking into the vote, please raise your flags. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's fine. The debate's not bad.
I would just rather have it now than change it and have people bitch later.
Alright, next person. The first person on this too is Representative Pajon. You have
No, that was written in here.
No.
He wasn't saying you said that.
No, he didn't refer to my comment.
Okay, yeah, sure.
What I wanted to see the water say was, no, 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 not all groups are lazy.
First, to Representative Bajaj, I completely agree.
Wait.
What? I completely agree with Representative Bajaj in saying that, you know, we opened this essay meeting with the calendar committee has met for a year. Let's tell them why we think they're wrong from the students' perspective, or, you know, however long they've been meeting. And I think the same goes for this committee. You shouldn't be saying that this committee's met for a year, so we should just take their recommendations for truth. I completely disagree with anyone who says that. I very much commend you for opposing it and bringing your own ideas to the table. My recommendation to yours, or to your proposal, rather than disincentivizing groups by penalizing them with a reduction in allocation, if you really want to look into this and you don't, you know, accept President Andrew's statement that, you know, groups will be incentivized to turn in their things because they want to get funding, maybe limiting the amount of, like, documents that a group can turn in at a hearing, so that they can't turn in, like, their full budget or something, might be a different way to look, but I would highly recommend against penalizing them from a percentage cap. And I'm going to give it to the SSC co-chair so they can talk about recruitment.
Recruitment chair.
So I run recruitment for SHC. We did receive quite a few applications. We already sent out interview confirmations. So it's really not within the realm of possibility at this point to vastly increase the number of members of the commission. Not to mention that particularly in our charter, it actually limits the number of members to 30, and we're already over that number.
So I think, was it 130 applications for...
It ended up, I shifted out like 30, so it's 100.
100, so about, for 20 spots, was it? Or,
and we're like, 20
spots. 20
people.
Spots, so.
10 spots.
It's about.
There were 100 applicants. We gave out interviews to 20 people. Those interviews will happen now.
And do you know how many you're taking?
You know,
I'm
taking
like 10. 10?
So 10%, 10% acceptance rate.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next person on the list is Representative
Yeah, so I may be one of the few people in the room that actually has almost no problems with any of these changes. I do think, though, that my concern is that, I mean, and I think most of you in this, like, at that table can attest to this. When we, you know, one of the biggest, one of the most frequent appeals this past year, this past semester, to appropriations committee was with publication, that now when the publication be provided as a copy of their existing, like a previous paper to show that they can do a magazine, basically, when they submit a request for addition for funding for a new magazine. Those changes were made by us maybe a year ago and implemented at the beginning of last fall. These groups, despite our emails, despite alerting them, despite putting things on the website, had not heard of these things, were completely confused, hadn't heard of this rule, other than an even newer rule than it actually was. And that's my concern with these, is that not only it's a big change, and we've done no education yet on these yeah, there's time to work out the internal FAFC stuff, but there's not really that much time to actually get the student body out of what it means to request a year-long budget versus a semester-y budget. Considering Representative Tsai mentioned that basically next year will be almost no different than this year, except because they can't seem to bring the next year thing, I see no reason not to accept them, vote for them, with the intent of implementing them fully in a year.
Yeah, and so again, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, a miseducation of the assembly members in that the changes which are being proposed, and let me say this very clearly, the changes which are being proposed will have no direct effect on student organizations unless they wish to take advantage of the changes that we're making. So year-long versus semester budgets, there seems to be a misunderstanding here. We are still doing semester budgets, technically. We are still doing semester budgets, all right, if it's an easier framework to understand it. The simple fact is that if you would like to hit your cap, the funding cap, which is probably going to be based on this year's caps. So if you hit, let's say, $9,000 in the fall, all right, you can use all that money in the fall. And if you don't use all that money in the fall, that money simply rolls over to the spring. If you don't hit the cap in the fall, and you still have $1,000 left over to apply for, you can apply again in the spring. If you apply for, let's say, a certain percentage of your funds in the fall, and you realize you have another event in the spring, you simply apply for that event in the spring. And even if you had some money left over in your account, then the SAFC can simply fill up your account as long as below the cap to however much money you need. So the organizations will not be affected by this at all unless they want to take advantage of the changes. And so that's why this education piece, I think, is not necessary. And this is directly an answer to your question. This education piece is very important. I completely wholeheartedly agree with you. But as you also notice, I've been talking about these changes with this assembly for over a week. We've been meeting one-on-one, sat down, and talked about these changes for over a week, and still there's some debate, some questions about specifically what the changes cover. And so what's beautiful about the system is that the organizations are not necessarily going to be affected unless they want to take advantage of the new flexibility in the system. Thus, I do not see the need to delay the implementation of this great ability, this great flexibility for organizations by a year for an education process which, as you demonstrated in your example, may be limited in its effectiveness.
The changes are substantive. They are very significant changes, but in terms of limiting what organizations do or imposing new obligations, there's zero.
Okay, but
Sure. So on the caps, you just said what happens if 25 groups apply, then we would mostly allocate caps like we do right now, assuming everyone was applying semester to semester. The more groups that apply for an annual budget, the more we have to project for the spring semester. It's not like a set equation, but it's not impossible. And we've done it before, and the GPSA has done it year after year after year for the past however many years. Like, it's not impossible.
I also want to point out that the most criticized decision that I've received feedback about since I took my role in SAFC in 2006 was when the SAFC went to strictly semester budgets and didn't allow groups to do annual budgets anymore. It disrupted a lot of programs. It resulted in some very tense and unpleasant meetings with deans and student advisory folks. And I think it was a huge mistake, and I'm very pleased that this committee is talking about undoing that. It does place a burden on the SAFC in the sense that they have to... Can I have just 30 more seconds? Okay. Can I speak? Yeah, okay. It puts an extra burden on the SAFC leadership in that they have to be less formulaic in how they determine how much to give out in the fall. But that's a very small price to pay, and it's no price to pay procedurally to give organizations immense flexibility and reduce the amount of work that everybody has to do allocating two budgets for groups that only need one.
That's out of order. So next we'll be speaking to the representative from Bruce. That's fine.
While this resolution isn't perfect and we don't really agree with one of the students parts of this, I completely understand at this point that we've been also a lot of input on this, there's been a lot of outreach on this issue. And when it comes down to it, something has to be done about SAC's guidelines. And ultimately, comes down to it, I approve the resolution. There's going to be problems. I see an economic impact as far as what's going to happen after this money on funding. I absolutely do not want to extend it alone like we did this year. I absolutely do not want to go through the process we did as far as preparations next day this year. I think that one, we have to find a way that's going to mention the resolution that I've seen. To the point of what the appropriations committee role is in deciding appeals and trying to figure out that process and not being seen as it were. I mean, I'm guilty of that, and several other members of the committee members are as well. When it comes down to it, I approve this resolution. I strongly encourage everyone else to not call the question.
Okay, this is a call to question, and there's a second. There's a dissent, so we're going to vote.
And I apologize about the sentiment that I presented, which was not accurate about not changing things, but I do want to say that we have thought long and hard for a year, met every single week for a year regarding these changes. They are implementable. We can do it. There's been a lot of review over the SAFC, about the SAFC this entire semester. The SA had more appeals than we've ever had, at least in my memory. Regarding Matt Danger's point, another reason why we should implement these this year is because it's a byline funding year. So if we do have to address the issue of how much money do we have to allocate to the SAFC, is it appropriate? We can address that next semester as well when we see how the funding process is going to flow. And I do want to say that though these changes do have some question marks, the committee behind the scenes has discussed every single one of those question marks, and though we haven't specifically spelled out how to address them here, I think that because we've talked about it, because we may be implementing these changes, we'll be forced to actually address those question marks. But until we have these rules passed, there's going to be a lot of intransigence. It's going to be much tougher to address those questions until we've actually passed the changes.
As it's time.
30 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just as Vince said, you know, we've had SA representatives, the SAVP finance, SAFC commissioners, chairs, future chairs, like a lot of input from a lot of sides has gone into this formula. And I think the fact that no one agrees upon it goes like is a testament to the fact that everybody had to make concessions, and at the end of the day, this is the result of what is like best for everyone around the table, not the best for any specific person. And finally, you know, the on-course point, like this isn't the end of the conversation for the next 5 years. And like what we're trying to do here is set a framework so that we have something to build on next semester and next year as a new student assembly. So if you have changes beyond this, we can always propose them and talk about them. But this is just to set the first step so that we can go off of that.
Thank you. All right, we're now going to move to a roll call vote. Will the clerk please call the roll?
I vote on this. Yeah. So, yes.
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 Throughout the semester, but we're not done.
We are not done.
I'm not sure anymore.
Wow, that was a lot of debate for a unanimous vote.
We agenda for 7 minutes.
The agenda rule.
That
one
in red. Oh, my God. I felt bad.
You're right. Can you put numbers in here? Oh, in the future?
Page numbers, okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to make a note. All right, moving on to Resolution 76, creation of the SA Vice President of Outreach. Yeah.
I noticed
that
it's a great speaker time ever, you know, how hard it is.
Yeah.
So this is still a concept that Natalie and I have been thinking about for a couple months now, actually. And,
Give it to him.
You
spoke to Johnny Bowman.
Of the PC of outreach, which was coordinated with outreach after the Bishop. What are the chief organizations like the meeting with them, to make sure that the rest of the meeting with their team? And it's really.
For the entire year. So much like the women's representative, this is going to be an issue that is fully focused on for the entire year, and is something that every representative, I would argue, wants to do, but might not have the time or energy to do.
And if we do pass this today, we are completely open over the next 4 or 5 weeks to honing in on the specific charge of the VP of Outreach. This is what we laid out, but we are completely open to refining it or adding to it.
And just one more thing. The new USA is a great, great group of representatives. I'm so excited. We've already done a lot together as an SA, and I've talked to almost every single one of them, and they all feel like we do need this vice president of outreach. I can't speak on behalf of the entire new SA, but I can argue that a lot of people are very excited about this new position, and I've already been contacted by multiple representatives who would like to run for this position and have a lot of new ideas that separate themselves from the vice president for PR.
Do you want to move it?
Right. Okay. We have the first speaker, Representative Burke. All right, Representative Dan. Yeah, so far it's been in mind blowing the extensive debate I'm going to support this. I just want to say that, and this is kind of more of a case of the essay than anything against the resolution, is honestly, this, what the VP of Outreach will, God willing, do is that what SA members should be doing. And so, what I see this position as doing is creating someone who's going to kick the SA's ass and actually do his job. LGBTQ community feels as though there's an adequate outreach. I'm sure the AAC community feels as though there's an adequate outreach. I'm sure the community ecology community feels as though there's an adequate outreach.
But you and you.
And I'm just saying, every SA member should be reaching out to the constituencies they represent. That's only difficult for at large, and it's only difficult for at large members. And, you know, there are ways to do these things. You can do candidate work, you can do just sit on a whole plaza and shake everyone's hand and ask them what issue they're dealing with. Now, if you do your job like a normal SA member should be doing, we don't have an outreach problem, but we definitely do. I support them, and I yield back to the
Can I respond?
Yeah.
You have 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, it's just to provide an infrastructure on the essay to make it happen. VP of IOPS is supposed to make sure that people are showing up, you know, and attending meetings, and we have, and, you know, obviously they should be attending meetings anyway. So I think you could make that claim about, you know, various positions. So it's just to provide sort of that sustained infrastructure. And just also as a side note, we were planning on moving it from Section 4 to after VP of PR, since it's the newest position to the SAE board. So it would be now Section 7 instead of Section 4. I think it's friendly.
Yeah. All right, can you run it?
It's now, I'm sorry, it's going to be Section 6. And then it's going to be right after PR, which is Section 5 now.
Can the clerk please note that? Section 6.
And I'll send in an updated resolution tonight or tomorrow. It's basically, no, it's just tacking on, it's just putting it after PR. It's right now it's in the middle, but we decided after speaking to a few people that since it's a newer position, it'll go after PR, which, yeah.
Thought about that, and we just wanted to pass the position before we tried to change the charter. So first we wanted to make this a position, and then we'll bring back a change to the charter next.
To make
so right now VP of Outreach would be a
no, right now VP of Outreach would be a voting member, but this, because this won't be in effect until next year, we didn't need to bring the change to the charter simultaneously.
And we do plan to make another. We do plan right now. Or considering right now to make the Director of Elections a voting member. I didn't even think about it. No, I... I think we should wait for Kristen.
So that's the thing. We've discussed all the other resolutions at least, have seen them for a
yeah.
week. But let's just discuss resolution
okay.
78 for 7 minutes.
Okay.
And then we can adjourn. But I do want to discuss it because next meeting
okay.
is the Constitutional Convention, and then after that we are gonna have a whole boatload of resolutions as well.
Okay. Okay, so I don't know about, I think there was some consensus, and as during SAFC appeals over the course of the year and last year, there's always a little bit of confusion of, you know, completely understanding the guidelines because they are complicated and there are a lot of, you know, different clauses to them. So basically this resolution, it's co-sponsored by myself and the VP, the Vice Chair of Internal Operations of the SAFC, Kristen Jenkins. Basically, it would have SA members go through an SAFC training, almost the same one that new commissioners or returning commissioners get at the beginning of the semester, just so during appeals, because they do come up, we will fully understand the mindset that they're going through, so that we're not only looking at it from a more macro point of view in terms of student life, but we're also able to, as much as possible, look at it from their lens. And I think it will give us, you know, I think it will give us a better, a more fuller picture of the whole process.
All right. I'll have a first question.
Yeah.
Why is there no clause in, for example, that all assembly members who do not go through this training do not vote on that day, do not appeal to the assembly?
I didn't think about that, but...
As an enforcement mechanism, would you consider something?
Yes.
Person who thinks it's a person that
I'm getting. Yeah. Just to piggyback on the mental state, I was kind of looking at what are the things that we do as far as holding us accountable to, like, making sure that, you know, we're going on. So,
well, actually, the SAFC would love if we have to take the SAFC commissioner quiz and pass the commissioner quiz. So, potential amendment.
Alright, moving on to the next speaker.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's definitely a very good idea. I just think, like, one thing that I don't know if you guys have considered this at all, but maybe educating the NSA, I would love the NSA to be doing, like, something parallel to this about, like, how the NSA works. Because, like, you think that's just, like, a two-way street.
Well, the thing is, though, they do come to us for appeals. And, I mean, I recognize that that's legitimate, but at the end of the day, how many people here have been to an SAFC budget hearing? I haven't. Not many at all. Whereas if you go to the SAFC, The e-board and probably a lot of commissioners have been to an SA meeting before because they have to be to present their case. So there's nothing in here except for very little parts with the liaison who actually have to go to the SAFC, whereas they actually have to come here. I'm willing to entertain the amendment, but... Not more than 2 hours, probably an hour to hour and a half.
Okay. I definitely support this initiative. I would just say, one on the whole, analyzing the numbers. I've never been to a bunch of hearings. I've never been to an SAC meeting. I probably won't be going on this Monday. I have a fairly good grip on the SAC rules. I think urging more members to do that is really important. But I think adding penalties, not necessarily. On the point of adding something parallel to the SAFC to come to the SA, I mean, what does the SA do? The SA just does whatever the hell it wants. That's all they get out of the discussion of. I mean, seriously,
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.